We're getting closer. I'm going to show you a video of the launch for any of you who didn't see it. And just go through a very brief description of the instruments and then comparison of what we expect performance-wise from Planck compared to WMAP, since everyone's familiar with WMAP. So the launch was, let's see, I hope to actually get some sound out of this.
Otherwise you won't be convinced.
Any of you did, the launch, except for the launch itself, turned out to be a big infomercial for Ariane Space, but I guess that's fair enough. They did a good job.
The money from the Americans.
Well, this worked when I was sitting over there.
Did you want the other play button?
I know what happened. And the launch went better than this, fortunately. Let me just go. Yeah. All right, I'm gonna actually kill it. French. Okay. Let's see if this. Start in a second.
À tous de l'élo, attention pour le décompte final.
Can you hear that?
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, top.
What does that dot mean?
Allumage
blast off. Oops.
So this was at California time, 6:12 yesterday morning. So, a successful launch.
Into the mic saying, "My God,
And this was not just Planck being launched, but also Herschel, Deep Red Telescope. Herschel was on top of Planck. 770 tons. And
at H0.
Yes, we know here that
after the initial launch, another critical phase to get through was separating.
Takes over a minute to make it.
Separating Herschel from Planck, and here's an image of from a camera on Herschel of Planck and the covering that allowed these two to be transported together in the rocket, falling away from Herschel after they're separated. And here's an image taken from the ground the series of images of that's Herschel in the front, followed by Planck, and then that this thing called Silda, which is the encapsulating thing around Planck that was around Planck, all traveling off together. And the first bit of unusual science from the Planck mission is what is this thing? I'm sure you all have an explanation for that by the end of my presentation. Man, how many technical difficulties can one talk have? Okay, so here's Planck just a few months before launch. And so this is the primary mirror. There's a secondary mirror here. And you can probably just barely make out the focal plane in here. And in that focal plane, there's two sets of instruments. In the center of it is the poetically named high-frequency instrument with channels from 100 gigahertz all the way up to 850. So the lowest three, possibly the fourth of these, will have CMB information in them. And the higher are useful as far as the CMB goes for controlling contamination from dust, dusty point sources. The low frequency instrument. So here, the HFI goes in this part of the focal plane. Here's the low frequency instrument around it. So if we compare with WMAP, the WMAP frequency goes from 22 to about 90 gigahertz. Planck from 30 to 850. WMAP's highest resolution is at that 90 gigahertz channel at 13 arc minutes. And for Planck, that'll be 5 arc minutes for the 217 gigahertz and above. And at lower frequency, it's diffraction limited, and you can scale from 217 gigahertz. The Planck sensitivity is significantly better should the instrument actually work as planned. We don't know yet much about the health of the instrument. There's a lot of cooling that still has to happen. Even one more day of cooling before anything on HFI can actually even be turned on. So we don't know a lot yet about the health of the instrument. So the maps will be a lot less noisy, and the polarization maps as well. One other difference. Is does anybody have a guess what these last numbers are about?
Number of days in operation.
Somewhat close. This is number of citations to papers that have results from the mission. And we expect that'll change. That's a lot of citations. On the left-hand side. So just to visualize what this means in the maps, so here's a WMAP, simulated WMAP 2-year map, simulated WMAP 8-year map, so the decrease in the noise. And then the Planck 1-year map, you can see that there's less noise. It doesn't look too startling, though, because the main features that you capture on the CMB by eye are actually at fairly low L, where there won't be that much improvement. From WMAP to Planck, but if we look in the Fourier domain instead of in real space, it's easier to see that. So WMAP noise. So let me orient here in this plot. So this is about the temperature ALMs, and this is the RMS of the ALMs in the signal. So this is the square root of C sub L. Right, and this is multiplied by L squared CL. This is just the square root of CL. That's why it's dropping. And the noise level here, which is flat and then kicks up because of the finite size of the beams. For WMAP, the noise level is about here, and they cross. The signal RMS at around L equals 700, and so it's at L less than 700. You're in the You've measured these things as well as you can if you want to measure the power spectrum. Whereas Planck will measure out to much higher L with signal to noise greater than 1 on each ALM. Now, I'm going to show you this next in polarization. This isn't something that's often shown, but Planck is not designed from the start to be a polarization instrument. There is certainly far from being the as far as you'd want to go with measuring polarization. Here's that same plot except for the E mode of polarization, and almost none of the modes are actually measured with signal to noise greater than 1. But there are a lot of modes with some measurements on them, and if you...
Where does the signal RMS come from, a particular
model? That's a standard lambda CDM model. Right.
So, look, there wasn't a way to make this
there are ways to make it better, and they are different experiments. these will be measured better from the ground, and if there ever is a cosmic inflation probe, then this noise level that would be bringing this noise level way down.
But more perceivably, since you can do better than this on the ground, why couldn't you do better?
First of all, Planck wasn't designed to be polarization.
Yeah.
Second of all, it's a little better than we plotted because this is the signal to noise per ALM. Whereas if you're going to measure power spectrum, you can do better. And the other thing is that the polarization has a lot of power on small scales, large L. So from the ground, you can integrate on a small attachment scale, which is why the
Right. I mean, the main reason you'll do better from the ground is by focusing on smaller patch of sky. And the only way you would do better per mode with Planck would be to somehow radically change its scanning strategy to do that would just have too much consequence on the temperature. Now there will be actually parts of the Planck map that have significantly greater integration than the rest, and that will change this picture. So that's the maps. What the differences look like in the maps. Here's in the temperature power spectrum. So this should look roughly familiar about what the quality of data we have from WMAP. And with Planck, we'll have tight error bars all the way across the whole range where the primary anisotropies can be measured. In the polarization power spectra. So, as Mark said, things start to look a lot better when you bin up those huge numbers of ALMs and beat down the errors. And so you can actually, even though these are far from being cosmic variance limited error bars, they're still very small error bars on both the temperature polarization cross correlation and the polarization power spectrum. As well as the E mode for the polarization, here's the forecasted sensitivity on the B mode. This is assuming a tensor to scalar ratio of 0.1 and also a kind of high optical depth to Thompson scattering. This is the reionization peak in the B mode power spectrum, which would be down. This is high by a factor of 1.7, so it would be down by a factor of 1.7 squared, presumably.
So we get this advantage by binning the haze, you're really sort of using a prior of the isotropy.
Yes. Yeah.
So that's the
It's also kind of worrisome from a control of systematic error standpoint when you're relying on that amount of when you're relying around that amount of averaging down with the modes. None of the individual modes measured that well. It's harder to find systematic errors that might be contributing
in a systematic way and not averaging down.
You're not assuming the prior.
It's interpreted.
No, you're only measuring the isotropic component of the power.
No, but to get this.
You measure that low CISO balance, and that gives you the isotropic component of power. You can then ask how consistent it is with isotropy, and that's a different measurement. That's a different combination of ARMs.
To do the averaging, but to get the error bars, I think Andy's right. You have to assume something about the statistical properties where you're averaging down in order to get the error bars.
I think you're just assuming that they're gaussian in this case.
And independent.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely assume they're independent.
I think they'll come up the same. Just by rotational invariance and number of data points on this guy.
Well, that's what we're questioning.
No, I mean, just
when I hear a
number of data. So you have, if you have,
distinction.
If I have a million ALMs, there are 10 to the 12 different combinations of pairs, right? But there's only 10 to the 6 combination of the same pair. That number is the, that number of pairs that pairs gives you the isotropic component. And then I think the error on that is just comes from that one, that 10 to the 6.
So, I imagine we're just imagining different ways of departing from the usual assumption. And if you can no longer assume that ALMs are independent, then that'll affect the error bars. If they are independent, then it won't. Right.
But the error bars you show assume they're independent.
Yeah. Now this is, I want to set the scale here. Remember the temperature power spectrum at low L is about 1,000 micro K squared. And this is 0.1 micro K squared here on this plot. So this is an incredibly small signal. This is, what WMAP found also is that in this range here at 90 gigahertz and 60 gigahertz, that's also the amplitude of the galactic foregrounds. So, going after this signal will be very difficult at low L. This is more of the tensor signal, and then this is from gravitational waves. That's from gravitational lensing of the E-mode polarization. So with that. Precision in measurement of the power spectra, one can then forecast how well you would determine the parameters of the standard cosmological model. And here in blue are forecasts for WMAP, 4 years of WMAP, and in red for Planck. And you know, the thing that I'd like you to take away from this is In a number of different dimensions of parameter space, things are just will just get a lot tighter, and so there's a lots of opportunity for discovering the unexpected. And if you're particularly interested in the values of some of these parameters, then that's exciting in itself. So the constraints on inflation, so the shape of the primordial power spectrum will get a lot tighter. From extending that lever arm out to much higher L. Here's a plot, a version of a plot we saw earlier today, the tensor scalar ratio versus the spectral index. And in this case, for WMAP, and the red here has the 68% confidence level, and the forecast for Planck down here. And so this is going to be a qualitatively different regime for setting the primordial perturbations. Now, I just had prepared a few remarks. I'm interested to hear what you all see as the scientific opportunities from from these type of measurements. So Planck science will be enabled by low noise, up to 5 arc minute resolution CMB maps at a large number and range of frequencies. It'll allow for qualitative advance in parameter estimation and strong tests of the standard cosmological model. So there's subdominant isocurvature modes, primordial non-Gaussianity, non-trivial topology. Also, from these maps, there'll be a greater control of foregrounds, which will be important for ruling out the non-CMB sources of the unexpected. That's all I have prepared to say. I don't know if you all have any questions. You want to see the launch again?
When's the first data release?
Right. The first data release will be, so the first full sky map will be completed in 9 months. And 6 months after that is the first data release, which is the early release compact source catalog. So the easiest thing to do with the data is to identify point sources on the sky.
Like you just did already.
That's right. and so these will be at the submillimeter wavelengths that are being covered. This is the first all sky survey at those wavelengths. So probably not this group. Other communities will be very interested in that release. And I believe that it's 2 years after completing the first map before maps have to be delivered publicly. And with that delivery will be science results as well. So it's going to be a while. This would be a very complicated analysis job.
So, it sounds like, we're going to get more information about the low Ls from the polarization. Is that fair?
Yes. Well, I mean, again, if it depends. I mean, one of the differences between another of the differences between Planck and WMAP is WMAP was inherently differential, and was useful for increasing their stability for being able to reconstruct from their data what's happening on large angular scales. Planck, in order to get that higher resolution, has just one telescope instead of two, and is no longer inherently differential. And its differencing is done over time as the satellite spins and comes back to the same parts of the sky over time. Our simulations show that we're able to, with the expected noise levels, we're able to reconstruct the polarization signals on large angular scales very well. So the nominal expectation is that there will be improvement on WMAP on polarization measurements at low L. Mm-hmm. Whether that actually happens or not, we'll see.
So in the early days of planning these things, there was a lot of talk of, so by not being differential, you have to have a stable. You have to understand your.
Well, you need to have enough redundancy in observing the same parts of the sky over time, so that you can control the drifts that are there. I mean, you go back to the same part of the sky at the time. The only reason it's different is because of the noise properties. And if you hit that enough times, frequently enough, then you create a set of hoops for systematic errors to jump through that becomes impossible. And
so that's more important than actual engineering for that issue, the stability of the...
Yeah, the scan strategy itself. Right.
So at the end of the day, not a whole lot is riding on exactly how the equipment turned out in terms of that issue. My question was, there was all these talk about could you make it this stable, and if you couldn't, is it worth it? And all this stuff. But it sounds like a very different...
Well, I guess it does come down now to the instrument, because we've checked out the scanning strategy for our nominal view of how the instrument works, right? And
another factor.
Yeah.
So it has this instrument been measured enough to now that it's been built that we already have some idea how that's working, or is it just have to wait and see?
We have to wait and see.
So it hasn't been put on the top of Jasmine Hall or studied.
The spiderweb bolometers that are on there are some similar variants of the only bolometers I think that have yet seen as maybe
Okay, cool.
So
people have an idea.
The detectors do work.
Detectors work. What you're asking for, though, is to go after, on the largest possible angular scale, to go after this signal that's in power is down 10,000 times from the temperature. It's hard.
How about the curvature? Have we learned anything more about the spatial curvature?
Maybe I will use this whiteboard.
So what we determined really well, we already know really well, the most accurately determined parameter from the CMB is the angular size of the sound horizon. Right, that lets scatter. And so if that's the sound horizon with less scattering, this angle we know really well. And in order to change that into, in order to use this to study curvature, there's two things we need. First, we need to know we need to know this distance, right? And we need to know this distance.
Right.
Now this one, this one we'll learn a lot better from, because this the sound horizon depends on the baryon density and the matter density. And this affects the details of the acoustic peak structure. So we'll know the sound horizon a lot better. So we'll be able to calculate. We'll be able to then turn this angle measurement into an angular diameter distance for this. So some angular diameter distance, and then. But in order to interpret this in terms of curvature, then we need to know the history of the expansion rate, right? Once again, some of that history also depends on rho matter. Right, and so this will help to have this pinned down better. Well, in order to really constrain curvature, though, then the key thing will be measurements at lower redshift, or if you want to assume a cosmological constant, anything that will help pin down. In general, you need to complement with some kind of low redshift measurement, then to change this into a curvature constraint. So it'll help by pinning down parts of what you need, and if you look at what you can get. How well you can constrain curvature by combining low Z measurements with C and B, then if you're doing a good enough job here, percent level measurements of distance, then the forecast is that you're doing about four times better with Planck than from WMAP as far as your constraints on omega k.
A factor of four.
Factor four.
If you assume a cosmological constant, it's similar though. Is it factor four
measurement? I'm not sure.
What if you have one of these dark energy experiments?
Then on curvature, you're.
How much better on curvature do you want to get? Why do you care?
I want to get down to 10 to the minus 4 because.
Yeah, I don't think those. I don't know if
so you can.
Also make me happy.
You can get.
So I actually worked this out. If you're doing, if you're making, you have to get sub percentile measurements of distance at low redshift in order to get down. And then with, it's at like, you know, 0.3% measurements of distance. Once you start doing better than that, then you don't do any better on the curvature. At that level with Planck, you saturate out. I think it's a few times 10^-4 on Omega K. So with WMAP, you also, you know, the current constraints on Omega K with WMAP also improve with improved low Z measurements. Mm-hmm. That's really where the action is in terms of better constraining Omega K. So Planck will buy you a factor of 4, but before you even get to that, you know, better low Z measurements are where things will improve. So, which is great for, I mean, the stuff motivated for, you know, presenting dark energy is exactly what you want for constraining curvature.
Okay, great. Even a factor of 4 is great. I mean, that's basically 2 meters or so.
One in the best. I still think you can, anyway, we should. I have this recollection.
From between WMAP and Planck, or you mean going to
counting states the model of the dark energy experiment?
Right. So by going from,
they're not really Planck alone.
Right.
Not even.
Right. That's what I'm saying is that the main thing. So the Planck WMAP comparison, that factor 4 isn't where you get your big kick. It's from doing the dark energy experiments.
So I think there's hope for this. And I also should, like, back when I was involved in some of this stuff, like, a lot of people wanted to model everything assuming curvature was 0 because they thought it wasn't interesting. But it was the same reason that the U.S. experts. And I think it is pretty impressive.
Do you think Tyler S. Moore is not great?
I can't remember. Now I'm wishing I could. So one of my things on my to-do list is to get a student to go back and actually get these numbers and make sure we trust them. And also, I'm not sure how much Lloyd you've already done since then already. You may already know this. But I just remember popping up some numbers at the end of the Dark Energy Task Force work and just being really struck by how
much
an improvement was, and then not sure if I checked everything and believed it.
I've written several papers about this, and one of them with dark energy, I think LSST is a model, you know, future dark energy experiment, and you're getting errors on curvature a few times 10^-4.
That's
about as good as you can.
Yeah, that's getting.
You can possibly, you can. There's still a fair amount of volume left of space to sample,
So SKA or something.
With SKA, right. So
the definition of the Omega K starts to get dicey when it's a origin, when it's a origin,
that's right. Yeah. So you get down to 10^-5, then we should start to see a signal.
Yeah. You'll see a different signal depending on
exactly where you go. Omega K can sort of be thought of as the C sub alpha L equals 0.
Yeah.
But the
in a flat universe.
Of
So it's totally within reach.